to me. Give it to me.
Welcome to It's a Thing, Season 3, Episode 9. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Molly Wood, and I'm dancing.
Yeah. We're actually playing the music live, secret, behind-the-scenes note. We always put it in after we recorded in the past, but no
longer. It turns out when Tom just does the magic thing on his end and makes it play, that it's like you get way more fired up for the
Stepping
episodes.
Up the authenticity in this house.
I don't know how you're listening to these or whether the statement is going to make any sense, but welcome to the next batch of It's a Thing episodes.
Oh, yeah. Some people may be going, like, discovering it now, right?
And exactly.
This is like their ninth in a row or right. Perhaps even more.
You could be binging at this moment, but for us, it is the commencement of a recording of another chunk of It's a Thing episodes, and I only mention that because it's always such a nice day to get to like come back and do a bunch of It's a Thing.
It's a Sunday morning. I did not do butter in my coffee, though.
This is where I have to confess that I haven't done it. And here's why, because once I started doing a little more research and discovered that the bulletproof coffee thing is a little more complicated than just plopping butter into the, so what it is that I've been thwarted by my lack of a hand blender. I mean, I could just throw it in my blender, I'm sure, but I have also not purchased coconut oil. It turns out like bulletproof coffee, like paleo in general, is just too much work.
Yeah. For those of you out there, some of you have mentioned butter soaked paper cups in your office coffee break areas. We apologize for not giving full warning on the complicatedness of the butter bulletproof coffee. You know, we have a big thing of coconut oil upstairs. And a hand blender. And
you have no excuse.
I have no excuse.
By the time the next episode rolls around, I will expect you to have a bulletproof coffee in hand.
And a bulletproof jacket.
I'll tell you though, I was at a party last night that was like a... Anyway, I was at a party last night. And it included a demonstration of how to make various kinds of salsa.
Oh, cool.
It was a taquiza kind of, Mexican theme party by this family that goes to my son's school. And they used a hand blender to make all these salsas, one of which included peanuts. I mean, the peanuts had been fried, so they weren't just like raw peanuts. But I was like, shut the front door. Like, it was hilarious because we all watched this woman make these four different kinds of salsas. And I think the thing that at least half of us took away from it was like, dang, I got to get one of those hand blender things. They can take down some peanuts? I did not know that.
Product may contain nuts.
She should have like pulled out like a box of those. She could have been selling them, making a little commission.
Oh, yeah. Like, oh, and if you just would like to have one of these hand blenders, I have six of them available.
Exactly. It's $19.99 a piece for Cuisinart brand.
Get them before they're all gone.
That's a bonus thing for you, audience.
You folks that all be elbowing each other out. Well, speaking of food, which we always do, I think, we over-index on food on this show, but it's important. You can't live without it. And our topic today, Molly, is man diets?
Yes, less food.
Man, food.
The man diet, or as I occasionally refer to it as the dude diet.
Dude diet.
I have noticed a distinct increase in the number of men I know, and generally like the social acceptance for men dieting and making this like, instead of sort of the, we're used to men being like, oh yeah, I can lose some weight as soon as I like, just kick it into gear a little bit. And it's not like men haven't dieted, but
it's more like dieting is for women and men work out.
And men work out, yeah.
Historically.
Yeah. And it's funny because while I was researching this, I found this study from like 2006, right? A new study examining the male-female diet divide. And it's, women were more likely as of 2006 to try different diet plans in an effort to lose weight and make greater efforts to limit sugar and carbohydrate and fat intake, according to the Journal of American Dietetic Association. Well, now they haven't done the study again, near as I can tell, but I think they should because I think Dan Marino and the dang Nutrisystem thing have actually worked and made dieting totally socially acceptable for men. And so now all of a sudden I know these men who are like showing up, I haven't seen them in a few months, and then they show up and they're like 30 pounds lighter. And I'm like, whoa, what are you working on? What are you doing here? And it's not even just that. So anyway, I'll let you talk. I think there's multiple elements to this that we can get in over the course of the episode.
Well, yeah,
have you noticed it?
Yeah, I think you're right. I hadn't really put it together, but it's sort of enveloped me, if you will. Like, I hadn't noticed, like, oh, you're right. That used to not be a thing. It's happened so gradually.
Right.
But you think back, let's say you're watching Mad Men, right? Those guys mention the word diet. They're going to laugh. They're going to say, real men eat steak and drink whiskey.
Yeah.
no diets for me. I'm a real man. That attitude died in the 80s, I think, when the health craze kicked in.
Well, and when all those guys died of heart attacks at 54.
Heart attacks from drinking whiskey and eating steak. But it became like, well, I'm not a dieter, because that still had a stigma. I'm manly. I eat what I want, but I exercise and I stay healthy and I eat healthier, maybe a little bit. But I don't eat health food because that's wimpy. And that's just kind of fallen away. And now being healthy is actually, considered attractive and sexy and manly.
Yeah. I mean, I think it goes with the whole idea that we are becoming a more nutrition conscious culture. I think there have been sort of really specific attempts to, part of this is spurred by, I did also see an article pretty recently with Dan Marino, an interview with Dan Marino, at the Super Bowl this year or during the Super Bowl. They interviewed him and they talked about, and here's these like sports broadcasters, like talking to Dan Marino about, was it hard for you to come out as a dieter? But he really talked specifically about how he was really trying to like encourage men to be cool with the idea that you need to go on a diet because you don't want to die young and abandon your family and this whole, and that it's okay to like to regulate what you eat in a really specific way and want to lose weight, right? To not be overweight instead of just saying like, I want to be ripped. And obviously we're gender generalizing all over the place right now, but we are.
But I think there's
the point of the topic.
It's fair to say there's a different attitude towards this in particular based on gender for sure.
Yes. And then I also think that the nutritional landscape has kind of pivoted in a way that is a lot more man friendly, right? Because like obviously paleo is pretty appealing for guys. I mean, now that it doesn't include all the BS diets, like just eat a lot of yogurt and grapefruit. Mm-hmm. Instead, it's more like, probably Atkins ultimately is the thing that started to turn the tide.
Because all those steak-eating guys can go, you mean I don't have to give up my steak? Just occasional whiskeys?
Or, exactly. Yeah. Or, maybe not so much steak, but like plenty of turkey and salami and,
Well, and it is about, dieting was about being thin. And guys didn't want to be thin.
Yes, exactly.
Guys wanted to be beefy and strong. And so now that dieting is less about being thin and more about not being fat,
mm-hmm.
It's a subtle shift, but it makes the pitch a lot different.
It really does. And so there's this whole, in 2012, there was the six diets for men. And there's the abs diet, the flat belly diet for men. So Jason Alexander signed on to be a spokesperson for Jenny Craig, said that he lost 30 pounds on Jenny Craig. Jenny Craig. Yeah. Like it's
not
a whole,
Johnny
it's
Craig. Some, they didn't,
not
they,
Johnny.
They, oh it.
They should totally do a dude diet spinoff. Johnny Craig. But anyway, it's really interesting. And then it's also I'm seeing all these guys roll in down 30 pounds. I'm like, whoa.
They're not rolling in, man. They're stepping lightly in.
There you go. Totally. And they're even the last guy, I feel hesitant to out him, but the last guy that I met with recently who I hadn't seen in a long time had lost 20 or 30 pounds and he did it by juicing.
Wow.
So now it's it's not even about just paleo, right? It's I'm juicing. I don't care. I own it.
Juicing's a thing.
Juicing is just an epic thing.
Yeah, it's way thing. It's way.
It's
thingy.
Way past the point for us to identify it as a thing.
Oh yeah,
it's
gone. No supernova.
Yes,
we still
exactly.
have to return those glasses.
Juicing and selfies.
The $7 juice glass. God. Yeah. I also think I have this suspicion that part of the dieting becoming more widely acceptable has to do with two social trends that are different. One is our widening acceptance of people. I know we like to think we live in such an intolerant society because really horrible things happen, things that have been happening in India lately.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, take a step back decade by decade, you look, and we are, at least in the United States, more accepting than we used to be. And it becomes easier for somebody to cross boundaries into something where it's dieting, than it used to be. That's not to say that it's 100% better, right? You always risk people going, yeah, but I have an example of this person who got bullied or this person who's made fun of or this horrible thing that happens, and I'm not disputing any of those.
Right.
But per capita.
Yeah, we may be a more, that's true. We may be a more sort of, well, and also, let's be honest, fitness has become the marker of the upper class. So fitness has become an aspirational thing, much like, you know.
I see what you're like. Like when I watch the celebrities that are rich on TV, they're all.
Yeah. Like I look around my school or my neighborhood, right, which is a fairly affluent neighborhood. And you can totally tell the stay at home moms, like it's the Rubenette, the whole idea of like Rubenesque, right? The woman of leisure who doesn't have any muscle tone or a tan is now like completely the opposite, right? Because if you have time, if you're a stay at home mom or you don't, or a wife, a woman who doesn't work or a man who doesn't work, you have time to work out. So I look around and I see these women at my son's school and I'm like, they've got like prison bodies. Like they are just like ripped. And I'm like, yes, you are ripped because you don't work. And I see them. If I do go to the gym in the middle of the day, I see them there.
You know, it's funny because I work at home, I run in the middle of the day. I try to wait until after the commute's over, you know, and all the cars are off the road. Mm-hmm. And I guarantee you 99% of the people I see out running are either moms with their kids, you know, in the stroller jogging, or women of some kind, you know, stay at home, whatever. Maybe they work at home too. I don't know. But I don't see a lot of guys in the middle of the day.
Interesting. Well, yeah, exactly. Because we still have that, you know, because still, by and large, the people who stay at home and don't work are women.
Yeah.
If that happens in a family. So, yeah, I mean, let's just say the stay at home mom butt, that's a thing.
That's going to be the next exercise craze.
It totally is. Get the stay at home mom butt. Which is not. I'm going to get emails. I'm totally not saying that being a stay at home mom is an easy gig.
No, of course not.
Yeah, like, let me just clarify. I know perfectly well how hard it is. But once your kids go to public school or school, once your kids go to school, if you do have that chunk of time, It's rock hard stay at home mom butt. I want that workout.
Yeah. Well, and honestly, I mean, I think it ties into your point that the reason that they exercise is because it's a way to get a break.
Yeah, that's,
you know,
true.
I mean, I see the moms with the kids in the stroller and I'm like, smart.
You know? Yeah. Oh no, it's genius.
Yeah.
But so I think for men too, it's like fitness now, there was maybe a time when you would glorify like a big belly and a hard drinking lifestyle or whatever, a little bit more when society might. But now, like, I think fitness has become the sort of hallmark of like your, you know, because we're an aspirational, want to belong society, of your affluence and your leisure, your ability to have leisure time.
Being fat used to be a sign of affluence, and now it's the opposite.
And now it's the opposite, exactly. Right.
That's about half of my second point I was going to make, which is we have, I think even in just the past 50 years or so, grown up about food.
Yes.
And it has to do with the Green Revolution and the fact that in large parts of the world, and again, never speaking in absolute, there's obviously parts of the world that are starving, and I'm not trying to minimize that. But in large parts
of America,
there's plenty of food. And so there used to be that most of the world didn't have enough food. And we've gone from that to a society of plenty in many areas. And in those areas, we've had the luxury to start figuring out how to eat right rather than just figuring out how to eat at all.
Yeah. I mean, not all of us. Like, again, that it really crosses.
Totally 100% agree with that.
Exactly. Like, but there obviously
that
are.
Change the fact that there are large chunks that do. Right?
But it's happening. And and when it happens, you know, and this is just an economic reality. Like, when rich people start to eat well, it trickles down.
Yeah, and it's not even just rich. Middle class eat well, right?
I'm sorry, do we have a middle class?
Yes, we have a middle class.
I thought that was gone.
That's all thin.
But no, yes, that exactly. Like, it started as a, you know, Chris and Gwyneth thing. Got less annoying, started to trickle, like, to the middle class.
There's a lot more food out there. Even for working class families, there's a lot more food options. And that's one of the problems is if you're working class, you can't afford to take the time to pick all of the best foods. You have to buy the cheapest foods. And the cheapest foods are oftentimes the worst for you. And so we're starting to understand that, lots of processed food, lots of cheap food, lots of mass-produced even vegetables, not that good for you. Mm-hmm. And we're starting to learn, like, okay, when we actually have enough food, whether we figured out the distribution part of it, right?
But that's the part I think we haven't. Like, there are still, like, legitimate food droughts. I mean, in Oakland. There are stores in Oakland where you would be hard pressed to find a vegetable for sale.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely.
Not to mention the middle of the country, you know.
But in total, we could, if we figured that part out, feed everyone.
Yeah,
right. Definitely. And so now we have this. We're finally learning. Well, wait a minute. When big swaths, not just the monarchy, but larger swaths have enough food, they'll start eating the wrong stuff. So how do we balance that? And I think we're just now, maybe in the past 10 years, getting over the fad diet and getting, and maybe I'm ahead of myself in saying getting over, but we're starting to narrow in on, these are actually the ways that we should eat and the ways
like
that
we can. Like a lifestyle of eating. Although, to be fair, that's how everybody has described diets forever, except for like crash. There was that whole crash dieting thing for a while in the 70s, I think.
And then, in the 60s, it was like you just eat vegetables and like, oh, wait a minute. That turns out
we've always known that is the thing. Like there's more argument now about what is and what isn't healthy. Like, is it vegetables or is meat actually not such a big deal or is fat actually OK? Like there's that whole conversation that's
what
happening.
I'm talking about,
more like there's more conversation about nutrition. And I think people are starting to internalize healthy eating in a way that isn't just like the government hectoring you with some weird triangle.
Well, and we've actually learned, right? I mean, the whole thing about don't eat fat was based on really good evidence that fat was the problem.
Mm-hmm.
But we just didn't know enough yet. And then we started to realize, well, wait a minute, it's more complex than that. It's not just that fat is the problem. In fact, fat isn't the biggest problem. It's a minor problem now that we figured out this is, and there'll be another thing come along that adds evidence. But that's the way science works, right? It doesn't give you all the answers instantly. It figures them out over time.
And in the meantime, dudes are starting to look good.
And the side effect of science is hot men.
It's good for me. We'll talk about standards of beauty on our next show.
Right. Body dysmorphia rampant among men. Next. It's about damn time that equalized.
Maybe not that. Maybe that's not the outcome we're going for, but
obviously not. Well, good. Man diets.
It's a thing.
I still, you know what? I have to, if we're going to talk about diets at all, I have to put in a plug for The Foodist.
Drink.
Because it's a book that's like, basically like, you don't need diets. You just need to eat right. And the problem with The Foodist, and I will admit this right up front, is it's not going to give you the plan to get there. And so a lot of people aren't going to be able to follow it.
Yeah,
because a lot of people need the trick. They need the paleo thing, or they need the Atkins thing, or whatever it is that gets them hooked. Right? They need that.
Yeah.
But it's great just to educate yourself, even if you don't follow it, because you learn a lot about like, oh, well, just making a smaller plate actually makes me feel fuller. That's just true. You may not think it's true, but it's true. Or dimming the lights makes you feel full faster. Like, it's all kinds of stuff like that. That it's just good to know.
Yeah. All right. Read it, everyone. Me, I'm holding out for the book of recipes.
Oh, yeah. She's got a ton of recipes on the blog now.
Can she put them all in one place?
They're on the blog. It's one place. It's on your tablet.
I'm looking. Tablet? Who reads on a tablet?
All right. Fine. Yeah. when the self-driving car creates the meal straight out of The Foodist for you with your smart home.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's Internet of Things buzzword.
I'm terrible. All right. That is it for today's episode, which, of course, as they all do, devolved into, generally speaking, a healthy eating show.
It devolved into Molly saying paleo and me saying foodist.
I swear, you guys, the next episode's not going to be about that. Stay tuned.
It's not. At least it won't start that way. It'sathing.me is our website. Go get all of the episodes. We have the first two seasons plus the first eight of this season there, as well as things like comments from other people. You can make posts there. It's great.
Yeah, please do. And also twitter.com/itsathing is our Twitter feed. We encourage you to submit your own things because they frequently show up as topics on our show because you guys are good at spotting stuff.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, if we didn't have that Twitter feed, we would never know that butter-filled paper cups were littering the offices across America.
See you next time, everybody.
Bye, everybody.